The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you things I didn't get to last week from USA Today, the IRS child tax letter, from the National Disability Rights Network, Schools and the Disabled, from NPR, Overlooked Population from the Everyone Gets COVID mentality. Foundation Fighting Blindness has a United Night to Save Sight fundraiser March 6th. WGBH has an article on blind and accessible COVID tests. We need more. Cool Blind Tech has an article about haptic sleeve and goggles helping blind see. Eyes on Success has recent episodes published. So let's get started. From USAtoday.com, don't throw away this document. Why IRS letter 6419 is critical to filing your 2021 taxes. Parents are flooded with paperwork every single day of the year, but this year they absolutely want to keep track of one key letter. Letter 6419 to be sent to you by none other than the Internal Revenue Service. Do not throw this letter away. Keep it with all of your other important tax paperwork, including your W-2s. Repeat, keep this letter to do your taxes. The IRS said in early January that it started issuing these letters in December to those who received advanced child tax credit money last year. But many parents had yet to spot this letter in the mail as of January 19th. It's important to keep an eye out for this information. The IRS will kick off the tax season January 24th when it will first begin accepting and processing tax returns. If you have any tax questions, feel free to fill out the form on the hot link, which also is below. USA Today will be answering the top reader questions as we go through the 2022 tax season. 2022 tax advice, how to get child tax credit cash, charitable deductions, and free help. Some families may want to hold off a bit when it comes to filing a return until they spot the letter, which can help them file an accurate return and avoid delays. Others who don't want to wait may need to review their own records and check their specific information at the IRS Child Tax Credit Update Portal site. There's a hot link for that. Someone who normally does not make enough money to be required to file a tax return will still need to keep this letter to claim extra money that could be owed for the child tax credit when they file a 2021 federal income tax return. Even if you had $0 in income, the IRS notes, you could have received advanced child tax credit payments if you were eligible. When did the advanced child tax credit arrive? Families who received the advanced child tax credit in 2021, the money went out from July through December, must reconcile what they received last year with what their financial situation is this year, and file a Schedule 8812. The monthly advance payments, part of a temporary expanded program, were designed so that half the total credit amount would be paid in advance monthly payments over those 6 months of 2021. The tax filer will claim the other half when filing a 2021 income tax return. The IRS issued the first advance payment on July 15, 2021. What does letter 6419 look like? While many have not yet seen the letter, I reviewed a sample copy that is posted online at irs.gov. It was found on the IRS page called Understanding Your Letter 6419. Letter 6419 is a black and white one-page letter with an IRS logo on the top left corner. It is issued by the Department of Treasury and the Internal Revenue Service. The letter has a big box at the top stating 2021 Total Advance Child Tax Credit ADVCTC payments. The letter states in bold, keep this important tax information. You need it to prepare your 2021 income tax return. The very top of the correspondence does not state letter 6419 in bold letters across the top, but it is marked as letter 6419 on the very bottom right-hand quarter. The term letter 6419 is also listed in box 1 at the top of the letter in the sentence that refers to married couples finding a joint return for the tax year 2021. Will I get one or two of these IRS letters? Great question. You might expect one letter. After all, a married couple that files a joint return sends in one tax return. So it would be logical that one couple would receive one letter. But that's not the case at all. The IRS will be sending two letters, and you're going to need to keep both of them, to married couples filing a joint return, according to April Walker, lead manager for tax practice and ethics with the American Institute of CPAs. According to instructions on the example posted at IRS.gov, if you file a joint return for tax year 2021, you must add the amounts in Box 1 from both letters 6419 and enter the total amount on Schedule 8812. Keep both letters. Do not assume you get a duplicate letter out of the blue and throw one away. What key information is on IRS Letter 6419? The letter itself spells out two key components that were used to calculate your advanced child tax credit payments in 2021. Box 1, which is at the very top of this letter, will tell you the total dollar amount of money you received for the advanced child tax credit payments over 6 months in 2021. You need to enter that amount on Schedule 8812 called Credits for Qualifying Children and Other Dependents on Line 14F or Line 15E, whichever applies. Box 2, which is right under Box 1, lists the number of qualifying children that were taken into account when the advance payments were determined for 2021. Note, if you are dressing and feeding two little ones in the morning, including a baby born in 2021, the box will likely list one child. Parents who had a baby born in 2021 did not receive advance payments last year, but now can claim that child on their 2021 income tax returns to receive money. The IRS notes that families who received advance payments need to file a 2021 tax return and compare the advance payments they received in 2021 with the amount of child tax credit they can properly claim on their 2021 tax return. Why does any of this matter? If you lose the letter and do not come up with a number that exactly matches the IRS files, you're likely to face lengthy delays in processing your income tax return. And yes, you'll wait a long time to get your federal income tax refund. Schedule 8812 notes specifically on line 14F, caution, if the amount on this line doesn't match the aggregate amounts reported to you and your spouse, if filing jointly, on your letters 6419, the processing of your return will be delayed. Mark Steber, S-T-E-B-E-R, Jackson Hewitt's Chief Tax Information Officer, cautioned tax filers that they need to make sure their total dollar amount for what was received for the advance payments is accurate when they file their tax returns. If this information isn't correct on the 2021 tax return, taxpayers risk a delay in receiving their refund, Steber warned. Antonio Brown, a CPA in Flint, Michigan, said on 20th of January that he had not heard of any of his clients getting their letters yet. It is possible, he said, to file the tax return without the letter, but you need to know exactly how much advanced child tax credit you have received and how many dependents the money covered in 2021. In general, Brown said, it is important to refer to letter 6419 before you file a return, because in some cases a taxpayer could have received a different amount for one child under age 5 and another amount for the dependent ages 6 through 17. Some families could be confused about how much was received. As part of the monthly payments, families received up to $300 for each child through age 5, or up to $250 for each for children ages 6 through 17. The letter breaks down how much was received and how many dependents it was for, Brown said. What is the IRS Child Tax Credit Update Portal? If taxpayers have not received the letter, taxpayers can look up the amounts on the IRS website at the Child Tax Credit Update Portal, but you're going to need to create a user account with the IRS. Brown noted that his early filer clients did not have the letter to prepare the return, but they were able to go to the IRS website to obtain this information, or they reviewed their bank statements to find it. George Smith, a CPA with Andrews Hooper Pavlik in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, said he has one earlier filer client who fortunately did receive the letter already, and they were able to easily file the return. Can I get more money from the child tax credit? Quite possibly. You want to file Schedule 8812 to claim any of your remaining money for the child tax credit. If you are eligible for the child tax credit but did not receive advanced child tax credit payments, you can claim the full credit amount when you file your 2021 tax return during the 2022 tax filing season, according to the IRS. And again, you want to keep letter 6419 to help you accurately report the total dollar amount you've already received up front in 2021. The total child tax credit for 2021 itself amounts up to $3,600 per child ages 5 and younger and up to $3,000 for each qualifying child ages 6 through 17. If you have one child age 3, you likely could have received $300 a month from July through December for a total of up to $1,800. Now, when you file your 2021 federal income tax return, you could be owed another bit of money up to $1,800. The tax rules, though, are complicated, and the actual amount you received now for your child tax credit is based on your 2021 income. If your income went up substantially in 2021, you might not qualify for more credit cash. These monthly payouts in 2021 via direct deposit into bank accounts or by paper check in the mail were based on information from an income tax return you already filed or information you entered in the IRS non-filer sign-up tool in 2020 or 2021. A lot might have changed in 2021, of course. Maybe you made more money last year and qualify for a smaller amount for the child tax credit than initially calculated. The IRS suggests that you review each monthly payment, including any changes, at irs.gov/ctcportal and then click Manage Advanced Payments. If you did not receive one or more payments for advanced child tax credit, you should contact the IRS at 800-908-4184 before filing your return. From NDRN, the National Disability Rights Network.org. New report details how schools are illegally removing students with disabilities. Contact David Card at press@ndrn.org. Washington, D.C. Schools across the country remove students with disabilities from the classroom using illegal practices known as informal removals. These off-the-books dismissals are described in detail in a new report released by the National Disability Rights Network, NDRN, called Out from the Shadows, Informal Removal of Children with Disabilities from Public Schools. The report provides examples of children missing entire semesters of instruction after being removed from school because of behaviors related to their disabilities. The practice, coined by NDRN as informal removal, refers to an administrative removal of a child from a school for a sufficient period of time to constitute a change of placement without the necessary legal protections. These are underground suspensions hidden from data reporting and policy reform efforts. The reality is that we have no idea how exactly how many children are removed from school each year, because school districts do not include informal removals in reports to the public, said NDRN Executive Director Kurt Decker. But we do know that our network represents hundreds of such children per year and that these removals hurt them. Federal law requires that children with disabilities who need behavioral services receive them, that they receive at least the same education as other students, and that they are educated with their peers to the maximum extent appropriate. None of this can happen when a child is at home during the day without schoolwork, or with a tutor who sees them a handful of hours per week. In one school district, 3 students with diagnoses of autism were repeatedly sent home because the school didn't have sufficient teacher's aid coverage and they were considered too difficult to handle. One child was not in school for almost a year. The law requires that these children, like all public school students, receive an education and that an appropriate program or placement be provided to them. In another incident included in the report, a 6-year-old boy with complex medical needs who exhibited disruptive behaviors at school, such as flopping on the floor while refusing to do work, was only permitted to attend school for one day per week. He was at risk of being removed from his foster home because his foster parents became increasingly frustrated by the shortened school days. Informal removal and lost instructional time have long-term negative economic, health, and community impacts for individual children and their families, said NDRN managing attorney and the report's primary author, Diane Smith Howard. Federal, state, and local officials must take action to stop the practice of informal removal. The report includes specific recommendations to end the practice of informal removal. They can be found at https://www.ndrn.org/resource/out-from-the-shadows/. The National Disability Rights Network is a nonprofit membership organization for the federally mandated protection and advocacy, PNA, systems, and the client assistance programs, CAP, for individuals with disabilities. Collectively, the network is the largest provider of legally based advocacy services to people with disabilities in the United States. From NPR.org, there's one population that gets overlooked by an everyone will get COVID mentality, by Leslie McClurg. 10-year-old Chase and 11-year-old Carson have alert minds and radiant smiles, but very uncooperative bodies. The two brothers have a rare genetic disorder called Meepan syndrome. They can't sit, stand, walk, or talk. For their parents, Danny and Nikki Miller, this means wheelchairs, electric lifts, diaper changes, and spoon feeding. Before the coronavirus pandemic, the Marin, California family relied heavily on several types of therapists and individual aids, and the boys' skills were slowly improving. But when COVID-19 struck, all that support went online or stopped entirely. The parents struggled to balance their own careers with homeschooling their boys. "We were taxed," says Danny Miller. "I tried to teach the boys physical therapy while it was being demonstrated over Zoom. We had a lot more responsibility, a lot more on our shoulders. You know, as if we didn't have enough already." Every new surge of the coronavirus sends the family into chaos, escalating the parents' fears that their boys might get infected. They are forced to limit all but essential social contact. Doctors have warned that the incredibly rare neurological disease, there are fewer than 30 known cases worldwide, puts the boys at higher risk, and their parents now dread a future riddled with variants. "We don't want anything else to potentially compromise their already fragile situation," says Danny. "Even after the Omicron surge ends, COVID-19 will still be with us, and learning to live with it will be a challenge for everyone. But that challenge will be especially difficult for the roughly 7 million immunocompromised Americans who remain especially vulnerable and will have to keep their guard up much higher than the rest of us. Among them is Sassy Atwater Wright. Her 39-year-old body is also very fragile. Right when COVID-19 hit in the spring of 2020, the Berkeley, California resident started feeling an agonizing pain in her head and face. Doctors discovered a very aggressive soft tissue cancer creeping toward her brain. Radiation and chemotherapy treatment wiped out her white blood cells and therefore her immune system. Leaving the house, let alone taking an Uber to and from the hospital for screenings and checkups, was and still is terrifying for her. Public transportation is still out of the question. Atwater Wright has fought cancer her entire life. When she was a baby, a rare cancer attacked her eyes, leaving her blind. "My superhero name is Tumor Killer Girl," she says. "I just went through my 100th surgery in November." If Atwater Wright gets a sniffle, taking a rapid coronavirus test isn't an option because she can't see the results. As a disability advocate, she's trying to fight for better access to home tests and ensure that vaccine messaging is accessible to people with disabilities. But that's hard to do over Zoom. "I do not have that face-to-face gravitas of me walking into a room anymore," she says. Atwater Wright would also like to sit in a cafe, take a vacation, and ditch her N95 mask, which presses into a sensitive scar on her face where her tumor was. But she can't do any of those things, and that's unlikely to change for the foreseeable future. "There's an element of risk no matter where I go," she says. "I can't step out in public and not assume that there's somebody unvaccinated nearby." Alice Wong, a prominent disability rights activist and author, also weighs life or death every time she goes outside. The San Francisco resident has a neuromuscular disability and uses a ventilator to breathe. "There is a casual acceptance that the pandemic will turn into something endemic and an inevitability that everyone will get COVID eventually," wrote Wong in an email. Leaders, medical professionals, and public health experts have said something along those lines with zero acknowledgement that people will still die and those deaths will be disproportionately from high-risk groups. Wong has been pushing for additional funds to pay for more delivery services to administer boosters and get masks and test kits to people who can't leave their homes. She is also advocating for stricter vaccine mandates, extended paid sick leave, and free personal protective equipment for home health care workers and employees of long-term care facilities. Wong says it's hard to see small glimmers of access like online events, priority shopping hours, curbside pickup, and even flexible work schedules slowly receding. It's exhausting, she says, defending one's very existence at a time when being immunocompromised has never been more terrifying. Their vulnerability is very much dependent on community case rates, says Bob Wachter, W-A-C-H-T-E-R, chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. They're probably going to have to modify their behavior based on the level of threat. But he stresses that people who are immunocompromised are not a monolithic group. Some patients are responding well to COVID-19 vaccines, and even for those who are not, like people who have undergone organ transplants, there's hope in new medications like Paxlovid, Pfizer's pill, P-A-X-L-O-V-I-D. It attacks the virus in a way that's not dependent on your immune system, says Wachter. If you get COVID, it lowers the chance of hospitalization by 90%. If you can lower your risk by 9/10 through a pill you take twice a day for 5 days, that makes the world a lot safer. Supplies of Paxlovid and other antivirals are currently scarce, but Wachter says that this should change over time as pharmaceutical companies ramp up production and scientists race to develop more drugs. Danny Miller, the father of the two boys with Meepan syndrome, is frustrated that so many people are choosing not to get vaccinated. He says those decisions are threatening his son's lives, and he would like to see politicians and judges take stronger steps to ensure higher vaccine rates. You have parts of the country where 2/3 of the people are not vaccinated or boosted, said Miller. That means things are going to drag on much longer than they should because we are not all in this together. Recently, the parents received word that there are positive cases in both of the boys' classes. They're weighing the risks of keeping the boys in school. Miller says time is critical for his sons. He doesn't know how long they have because very little is known about the boys' rare disease. COVID has taken 12 to 18 months away from us in terms of growth, development, and treatments to help the boys on their journey, says Miller. And with that delay, we're sort of trying to make up for lost time. I will have to postpone the article from WGBH also interviewing Walter Wright about accessibility of COVID tests for the blind. I just don't have enough time left. From give.fightingblindness.org, Hope from Home, A United Night to Save Sight. Sunday, March 6, 2022, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time. There are buttons to get tickets and donate. Join us for Hope from Home, A United Night to Save Sight. Experience incredible entertainment, amazing auction items, and the opportunity to connect with others through our live party rooms while supporting the mission of the Foundation Fighting Blindness, all from the comfort of your own home. Our Hope from Home MC and entertainer, actor, singer, and comedian Wayne Brady. Wayne Brady is a multifaceted performer. He has won 5 Emmy Awards for his work on the improvisational comedy television series Whose Line Is It Anyway, for his own talk show The Wayne Brady Show, and for the revival of Let's Make a Deal. He has also appeared on TV in The Masked Singer and How I Met Your Mother, and on Broadway in the award-winning musicals Chicago, Kinky Boots, and Hamilton. Wayne is a Grammy Award-nominated recording artist. Hope from Home Party Rooms. To make Hope from Home a truly unique event, we are hosting 6 simultaneous live party rooms where you can join and move in between different activities. Check out our unique rooms below. The Mixology Room. Learn how to make a pamplemousse and a spicy margarita with Chef Mike Betts. Plus, get all your cocktail questions answered. The ingredients list will be sent to all attendees and added to our website before the event. The DJ Dance Party Room. Dance the night away with DJ Duran while he plays the latest and greatest hits plus old favorites too. The Karaoke Party Room. Who is ready to sing their favorite song? Join our DJ in the karaoke room and sing to your heart's content. The Kids Party Room. We didn't forget about the kids. Join Rachel Applebaum for a variety of kid-friendly activities, including Puppet Simon Says, storytelling, music, and more. The House Party Room. Visit our House Party Room with Foundation Fighting Blindness chapter members from across the country and see how they're showing their hope from home spirit. The Sports Room. More details about this room are coming soon, but it's going to be great. Event Leadership Chairs, Alice Cohen, MD, and Jonathan Steinberg, MD. Committee, Michelle Barrett, Paula Bergstein, Keller Boston, Emily Laurenberg, Mindy Kaplan, Susie Ford, Susan Fries, Phil Fruch, Vicky Judah, Judy Call, Amanda Kahn Kirby, Davida Lewers, Jason Morris, Kathy Kwok, Stacy Ryder, Meredith Sauter, Miramaya Shaw Jr., and Lori Shaw, Jill Stone. For more information, including sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at 866-782-7330 or events at fightingblindness.org. Download the sponsorship form at the hot link. Do you have an auction item to donate? Contact us at events at fightingblindness.org with the details. Tickets and sponsorships. Tickets individual, $100 per login. Young professional, $50. Individual party pack, $200. Individual young professional per login plus party pack, $150. Party pack only, $100. Sponsorship, Visionary, $50,000. Innovator, $25,000. Luminary, $10,000. Discovery, $5,000. Insight, $2,500. Friend of Hope from Home, $1,000. Digital Journal, full page ad, $2,500. Digital Journal, half page ad, $1,000. About the Foundation Fighting Blindness. The urgent mission of the Foundation Fighting Blindness is to drive the research to provide preventions, treatments, and cures for people affected by retinitis pigmentosa, age-related macular degeneration, Usher syndrome, and the entire spectrum of retinal degenerative diseases. The Foundation is a beacon for those affected by these blinding diseases. Join the fight and help us accelerate our mission. I have less than 2 minutes left, so I need to skip the article from Cool Blind Tech as well. Eyes on Success Shows and Podcasts, Episode 2204, Accessibility of Medical Devices, aired January 26th. In order for people to take charge of their health and manage certain medical conditions, it is often important that medical monitoring devices be accessible to those who need them. Hosts Nancy and Peter Torpy talk with Tom Tobin and Jeff Bishop, who are both blind, about the importance of having accessible devices and where we stand today. Episode 2205, Taking Charge of Your Health, aired February 2nd. As a result of being born prematurely, Jeff Bishop had to deal with a number of medical issues, including becoming a diabetic. Hosts Nancy and Peter talk with Jeff about his journey to control his diabetes by making a series of lifestyle changes that included sticking to a healthy diet, regular exercise, and developing the drive to succeed. You can also now subscribe to Eyes on Success on our new YouTube channel at https://www.youtube.com/c/Eyes on Success with hosts Peter and Nancy Torpy. That's it. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.